The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
All right, welcome to a Thursday. We are shut-in central from to wherever you are from, well, where I usually am. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for joining us today. To anybody new who's new to the program, I know a lot of people are, you know, working from home or not working from home and maybe a little bit bored because there's nothing to do. I'm glad you found us. Thanks for being here. We had a busy day today. The show only lasts an hour, and sometimes we have a lot more than an hour's worth of stuff to get to. Today's one of those days. It's Thursday, and every Thursday, we get together with Howie Klein. He's Down With Tyranny on Twitter. He blogs at downwithtyranny.com. He also runs the Blue America PAC, which is dedicated to finding the best progressive candidates, mostly for congressional office, but they've expanded a little bit to where Blue America did endorse Bernie Sanders this time, although not until after Elizabeth Warren dropped out, because there's a number of them, and all of their endorsements have to be 100% unanimous. Among the principals, which are Howie Klein, Digby, John Amato from Crooks and Liars, and the few other people who work for them. I know Jackie is one, and I don't know who all else is on the staff. I know it's a small group. But anyway, they have to agree unanimously. And so Howie, I've known for years. I met Howie decades ago when I was doing music radio, rock radio in Los Angeles, and Howie was the president of Reprise Records. That's right. Howie comes from the music industry as well. And when he took an early retirement, when AOL bought out Time Warner, Howie put all his energies into progressive politics. And so we've been doing this weekly get together for a few years now. And so I'm always honored that Howie is with us every Thursday. So we'll talk to Howie in a little bit. In just a few minutes, we're going to check in with Zach Carter of HuffPost. He's a senior reporter at the publication formerly known as Huffington Post, in case you haven't noticed, it's now HuffPost. Anyway, Zach wrote a pretty scathing article up at HuffPost this morning about this new deal that the Senate passed yesterday, that the House will allegedly pass tomorrow, and then it'll go to Trump's desk. It's a $2.2 trillion bailout for billionaires again. The headline of the story is Democrats are handing Donald Trump the keys to the country. The Senate coronavirus bill is shocking. So we'll hear what's shocking about it. But as you know, I like to start things with something humorous because shit's getting real. I mean, we are all, if you're not freaking out, please share with me your secret because, oh my God, if you turn on the news and you watch the reports coming out of New York, out of Queens, where I lived the first 11 years of my life, Queens, New York, seems to be ground zero for the coronavirus right now. They're showing video of a hospital in Elmhurst, Queens. It's Mount Sinai West. I was born at Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan. This is Mount Sinai, the Queens branch, if that's the right word for it. And they are overcrowded. They are overpacked. The morgue is overflowing to where they're using refrigerated trucks to store the bodies of the people who have died. They're out of space in ICU. This is just the beginning. So with that as the backdrop, you know, I like to always start something. I start the show with something humorous to make us laugh because you know what the alternative is to the laughter, right? And I got to tell you, you know, a month or so ago, there were days when I was scraping, trying to find a good funny bit to start the show with. These days, with way too much time on our hands, people are getting damn creative. And so I've got a lot. I've got them stockpiled. In fact, tomorrow, who knows, we may do a weekend blowout and have some fun again. I have no idea what we're going to do tomorrow at this point. We'll figure it out before then. Anyway, but to start today's show, our friend Lauren Mayer, who is our resident song parodyist. Well, she and Boca Brittany Summers when Brit, you know, produces something new. But Lauren Mayer is knocking them out one or two a week. And so we've got a brand new one from Lauren Mayer. You can visit her Patreon page because, like the rest of us, we're all scrambling to stay above water. I'll give you my pitch for, you know, donations a little later in the show. I'm so bad at it. Just know I'm hurting like the rest of us. My monthly subscriptions, you know, as you know, my show is not behind a paywall. I did that on purpose because a lot of people are struggling like me. I can't afford to pay $5 or $10 a month for a podcast that I want to listen to. So I decided to run this show like the old public radio model, which is you turn it on, you can listen to it. It's there. It's free. But I do subsist on your donations. So if you can't afford it, and I need to say that disclaimer because I have a number of, you know, loyal listeners who have sent me money, even though I know they're really hurting. So if you're in that position, hold on to your money because we are all going to need it. So I'm begging you, if you're a listener and you can afford a few extra bucks as a one-time deal or on a monthly basis, then please do subscribe because I could use your support. Okay, enough of that. I'm so bad at the fundraising part of this. Oh, that's why I never made it in public radio. It would be better if I could just run commercials, but, you know, I don't do that either. All right, so we'll start today with a new one from Lauren Mayer. That's Lauren, M-A-Y-E-R, like John, although they're not related. And, yeah, so take it away, Lauren Mayer.
They've informed all of us this thing is serious. We've got to shelter in place. Schools have to close. I'll cope, I suppose, though my house doesn't have that much space. But sitting with my kids all day, I haven't figured out a way to do a little work for my own job. My kids already whining from what they're assigning, and I'm realizing I can't handle teaching at home. It's stressful, going insane from the pressure with so many tricky word problems. Don't know how to solve them. The misery's getting to me. Second grade math is confusing. What's this figurative language they're using? After just a few days, I can see teachers need a huge raise. Now that I'm teaching at home. Now that I'm teaching at home. It's my sugar. I don't know what to try to make some time go by. Hell, I'll just let them play video games. But it's really upsetting. Soon I'll be forgetting at least one of my students' names. Tomorrow when we first begin, I'm cracking down on discipline. Two kids are getting expelled. Now decorum is sinking, the teacher's day drinking, and it's only 9 a.m. I can't handle teaching at home. It's stressful, going insane from the pressure with major behavioral problems. We need their teachers to solve them. I owe them all an apology. Rising amounts of aggravation. I'll just announce time for graduation. Now I'm suddenly dismayed that our teachers are so underpaid. now that I'm teaching at home. Now that I'm teaching at home. This is no longer cute. Can I get a substitute? Why, it's worse than beyond Thunderdome. Now that I'm teaching at home, I can't handle teaching at home. Where's their father? Can't find a comb. Oh, why bother? A class size of three is too draining. When's the next teacher training? A fire drill sounds good to me. Kindergarten math is confusing. I don't know any of the words that they're using. It's abundantly clear teachers should be paid $6 million a year.
Oh yeah.
Now that I'm teaching at
it's
home,
a tough road.
I might explode. Good thing that we don't have any dress code. It's a tough road. I might explode. Good thing that we don't have any
now
dress code. It's a
home.
Tough road.
Oh, the awesome Lauren Mayer. That's an original. Someone in the chat room said, what is this a song, a parody of? And it's not. That was an original. Sometimes Lauren Mayer does a parody of an existing song that we know. And occasionally she writes an original, lyrics and music. And that's one of those. Good stuff, huh? Let's do one more. You know what? I'm not going to have time. All right. So we'll revisit. We'll do another one later. And again, tomorrow we'll have a bit of a party. Okay, I got tons of them. But we got business to attend to. So as I was saying, let's bring on Zach Carter, shall we? And in case you're wondering, well, we taped this a couple hours ago because it's busy. Everyone's busy and on deadline. So let's go to the videotape. Joining me on the line right now is Zach Carter. He's a senior reporter at HuffPost, someone I've had the honor of speaking with for many years on this program. But Zach, I had to call you this morning because I read your piece at HuffPost.com headlined, Democrats are handing Donald Trump the keys to the country. The Senate coronavirus bill is shocking. I've heard a few people criticize it, saying this is not what we need. Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York is one. He actually came out and said the package will do next to nothing to assuage the disaster unfolding in his state. But you were pretty harsh on it. So you're not at all confident that this $2.2 trillion bill passed unanimously by the Senate last night is going to do much to help us, huh?
No, I'm very disappointed in the legislation. The headline figures, it's a lot of money that's being spent here.
Yeah, right.
The $2.2 trillion, to be clear, doesn't include trillions of dollars that are being essentially authorized at the Federal Reserve to help corporations and corporate shareholders. So it's closer, I think, to a $6 or $7 trillion package, depending on what we see from the Fed. But ultimately, this is a package that is designed to rescue the rich.
Hmm.
It is most of that money, the Fed programs, a large fund set aside at the discretion of Steve Mnuchin, $454 billion. This money is essentially no strings attached money.
Again?
There are a few... Was that Nicole? Sorry.
Yeah, I said, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I said, again, isn't this what happened in 2008 with TARP, which was a basically four-page outline that freed up considerably less money than we're talking about now, but it was still, like $700 billion, and there was no oversight attached to it. I thought they were fixing that in this bill, no?
This bill uses the 2008 bank bailout as its model.
Oh, God.
There are some differences, but the basic template is the 2008 bank bailout bill. And that's why it's a bad bill. The 2008 bank bailout bill, in both cases, it was essential to get money to both the corporate sector and to ordinary people, to workers. But the way you provide that money matters. And if you don't provide the right type of guidance for how the money must be spent, then it gets spent on, silly things. So in this case, I think we're going to see a lot of money that just gets sort of wasted on the stock market or in payments to shareholders. There's not even a restriction on companies from paying dividends with money they get from the federal government. So they could get money from the Fed and just literally cash it out to their shareholders. That's irresponsible. Congress could have legislated something different. And the money that's set aside for ordinary people is just not very much. There's a $600 a month boost in unemployment benefits for people who are laid off. That's important, but a lot of the people who are going to be struggling in this case are not going to qualify for unemployment benefits. Some people are going to keep their jobs and see their pay cut. We just saw at BuzzFeed, instead of laying everybody off, they cut everybody's salary by a certain percentage point. I think there are going to be actions that are not usually taken in a recession by companies, because this is going to be an extraordinary economic downturn. We have never seen, or nobody living has experienced, anything like what is about to happen in the United States. I mean, this is a breakdown of the global supply chain system that has been developing since the WTO era and the NAFTA era of the early 1990s, coupled with a demand shock from people's, retrenched purchasing power. And then ultimately, I think we'll have a financial crisis, something like we had in 2008. So there are at least three separate enormous economic crises piled on top of each other. And $600 more a month in unemployment benefits is not going to do the trick. Now, there is this $1,200 check that they're sending out to people, except it's not $1,200. It's $1,200 for people who make less than $75,000 a year.
Right.
For whatever reason, Democrats and Republicans decided that it would be really irresponsible to provide these checks to people who make $80,000 a year or $100,000 a year, because they wanted to target the money where it was needed most. But they didn't put any restrictions on the money they're giving to corporations. So that money is going to go to corporate shareholders. Corporate shareholders are overwhelmingly wealthy people. Only about 20% of Americans own at least $25,000 worth of stock. That figure is undoubtedly lower, because those statistics are they predate the stock market crash of the last couple of weeks. So this money is going disproportionately to rich people. They cared a lot about making sure, middle class, upper middle class people don't get, a $1,200 check, but they didn't seem to mind when they're funneling money to corporate shareholders what form that relief takes. So I'm very, very disappointed in this legislation, and I think it's a bad model for a relief bill, and I think it's very disappointing that the Democratic Party, not just the sort of moderate leadership of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, but the progressive leaders like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders decided to vote for it.
Right. Well, Bernie actually took a stand, and he delivered a pretty impassioned floor speech last night, because there were a handful of Republicans, Lindsey Graham, Ben Sasse, and a couple of others, who objected to the $600 unemployment relief on top of regular unemployment benefits, because they said some people actually might wind up with more money than their full paycheck would have been. And Bernie's like, really? You want to do this? And so the amendment that they threatened to disallow such a travesty to happen didn't appear. And so it was unanimous of the 96 senators present, four are out because they're in quarantine, or like in Rand Paul's case, tested positive for the virus, weren't able to be there, but 96-0. On the other hand, apparently at the 11th hour, somebody with an eagle eye noticed a provision that had been agreed upon was missing, and that would have allowed, or it would have given the big moneyed groups and those responsible for doling it out 6 months where they didn't have to say who was getting what, like a 6 month complete, no transparency allowed. And they fixed that language. Those two things were supposed to appease us, but it's not good enough, as you said. I mean, is there anything good in the bill? I mean, I know Bernie was pushing for, his proposal was $2,000 a month per adult, not a one-time $1,200 payment, which frankly, while I can use it to pay off one bill, is really not going to help me in the long term.
Right. Well, I mean, what's really absurd about the whole thing, look, $600 a month more for unemployment relief at these $1,200 checks, that these are not terrible things. It's better than doing
nothing.
Right. But this crisis is not going to last for a month, as you say. This is going to go on. If the United States responds to this well, most people think we're about 18 months away from a vaccine for this, at best,
right?
For the coronavirus. And in order to respond well, to keep mass deaths from happening, the economy basically has to retrench over that entire period. And so the $1,200 is not going to get you through the next 18 months.
Hell right? No. No.
It's not going to work.
No.
And there needs to be some sort of sense of certainty for people that there is money coming in that they can rely on, that Congress isn't just going to do some sort of emergency fix, you know, every 6 to 8 weeks when it becomes clear that actually this is still going on. They need to be putting in place programs that people can rely on, because if they want people to spend money on things, we don't want people going out in public and exposing themselves to the disease. But if we want them to you know, pay the bills, to stream their Netflix, whatever, then they need to have money in their pockets. They need to have the confidence to be able to spend that money. If they think that they're going to run out of cash in a couple of months, they're not going to do that.
Right.
So Congress could have passed that. They mm-hmm. could have said, we're giving everybody money for a certain period of time. They could have said, look, we will pay whatever the payrolls are at every company in the country for the duration of this crisis. Just send us your payrolls, tell us what it is, we'll do that. They chose not to do that. They chose instead to provide these very small social welfare payments attached to this giant corporate bailout. And what's going to happen, you know, there is some small business relief money in here. There's like $350 billion or something. But that's way too small to meet the scope of the crisis that's facing small business. I live in Brooklyn, and I mean, mm-hmm. I can tell you, every single shop in my neighborhood is closed right now.
I'm sure.
And these businesses don't operate with enormous, you know, cash margins where they've got just tons of money set aside for a rainy day. They rely on revenues, and if they don't get those revenues, they've got to shut down.
Exactly.
It's going to take at least a couple months for this small business money to get out the door. In that time, a lot of these businesses are going to fail.
Of course.
And with the corporate cash that's coming into big corporations, they're going to buy up businesses that don't fail, that are just struggling. So you're going to see more consolidation. And I genuinely think in 3 or 4 years, we'll look back on this and say that this was a watershed moment for American economic inequality, because the big are going to get bigger. They're going to have more power over the rest of us, and they're going to have more power over our political system.
This is frightening. And what in my view, and I'm just a poor working stiff living month to month off of the generosity of my listeners and viewers. That's what pays my salary. So I can't even file, you know, an unemployment claim because I'm still working self-employed. But again, my income is based on listeners' generosity. And most of my listeners have had their incomes cut. And so therefore, a lot of my sustaining monthly subscriptions have dried up, and understandably so. Meanwhile, people like me, we still have to pay the bills. We have to pay the rent or the mortgage. We got to pay the electric. We got to, you know, pay our health insurance premiums. Oh my God. And there's no relief for us. I've seen some countries have put, I think France, but don't quote me on that, put a moratorium on rent and mortgage payment. I mean, countries are freezing the economy so that people can sort of, you know, get through this until things can get somewhat back to normal. We're not doing anything of the sort. And you got Donald Trump saying, don't worry, it's all going to be fine by Easter. Everyone's going to go back to work. And church is going to be wonderful. I mean, it's insane, right?
Well, you know, fundamentally, this crisis doesn't get solved until you deal with the public health problem, which mm-hmm. is the pandemic. And this bill, there's some money for hospitals. It's not nothing.
Not enough.
But it's not enough. And look, we have supply chain. There are nurses who are wearing trash bags treat coronavirus patients because they don't have access to actual hazardous materials here. They can't get the supplies. We have a shortage of, we're going to have a shortage of hospital beds. New York City's morgues are overflowed.
Yep.
So they have makeshift frozen food trucks basically on the street for dead human bodies. It's appalling. This is going to put an enormous strain on our medical system. And a lot of our institutions are not going to be able to handle that strain. A few billion dollars for hospitals is the problem is not just money. The problem is actually physically getting supplies to and from these places. I think Mitch McConnell referred to this as a wartime level of investment in our country. In terms of dollar amounts, that's not totally a crazy point. $6 trillion, that is a large investment.
Oh, yeah.
But real wartime investment, like World War II, the United States government gets involved in production. It starts changing the way supplies are created, where, you know, where materials are resourced. There's nothing like that in this legislation. It is not, it doesn't mobilize any new resources. It doesn't improve the delivery of anything. It doesn't really have serious provisions to treat the crisis, which is why Andrew Cuomo, of course, not exactly a left-wing radical, is so disappointed with the legislation as well.
That's right. We're speaking with Zach Carter, senior reporter at HuffPost, who's got a brilliant piece you need to read about this bailout bill that will be voted on allegedly in the House tomorrow, whether we don't know how yet, because members are still scattered and many are in quarantine or some are infected and they're talking about a voice vote or unanimous consent. But there is no mechanism for that in the House as of yet. We'll see what happens over the next 24 hours. But basically, this thing is on a fast track to be signed maybe by tomorrow by the president. And yet he is still downplaying the severity of this and working against the medical experts who are trying to stem the spread of the disease. This can't end well. This is what's so frightening, right? So, Zach Carter, you've got a new book coming out called The Price of Peace, Money, Democracy, and the Life of John Maynard Keynes. The release date is May. It's available for pre-order now. And, in fact, you have another website, ZacharyDCarter.com, where people can get information on the book and pre-order it. Has this changed? I mean, the book is obviously in the can and ready to go. Has this crisis changed what the book is about? Does it have a weird, is there some kind of, I don't know what word I'm looking for. How does it, what the recent events, how does that jive with the trajectory of your book?
Well, I think it's one of those sort of unfortunate, you know, this is a freaking global tragedy, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is one of the worst things that's going to happen for generations.
Absolutely.
And small silver lining for me is that it's very relevant to the subject of my book.
There you go.
You know, Keynes was a thinker whose ideas were forged in crisis, and who spent his life thinking about how people respond to crisis and how governments ought to respond. I think most people know him as sort of the guy who told governments to spend money in recessions to drive up budget deficits in order to get out of economic downturns. And that's true, but it's a very small part of his thought. And it's really his body of work is really about trying to create a sustainable and prosperous democratic system, which he believed was threatened by inequality and in particular by uncertainties. So he was really shocked by the outbreak of World War I, and the war itself, I think, left very deep scars on his emotional and intellectual life. I think what we're about to have is something quite like that for our own generation. And I think the lessons from his work, will be very important over the next few years.
Without a doubt. Well, I look forward to reading the book. The other silver lining is we're all stuck at home, so we're looking for things to do. So you can pre-order The Price of Peace, Money, Democracy, and the Life of John Maynard Keynes by Zach Carter, Zachary D. Carter, that is. Zach, thank you so much. I know this is a crazy time. I appreciate you jumping on the phone with us for a few minutes to let us know what's going on here. We got a long road ahead. That's one thing we do know. This is not going to end anytime soon, certainly not by Easter. So thank you for your hard work in covering all this and letting us know what's going on.
Thanks for having me, Nicole.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you again. Sorry it's under these circumstances. There you go. Zach Carter from HuffPost. I hadn't spoken to him in a while, but I had to call based on the article today's HuffPost. Again, I will post it on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com/3
Senate-26.20. That's the standard of how these shows are posted online. Each day, I do a program. It's posted on the website, archived. There's the podcast. You can always subscribe to the podcast. But if you want to hear individual shows, that's how you find them, on the website, about NicoleSandler.com/the date. And yeah, feel free to explore, because everything is wide open. No paywall there. All right. It is Thursday. You know what we usually do at this time? We start mixing up a good batch of those Dirty Debbies. I think we could use a couple of extra hits of vodka in them today, don't you?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole, I hope you're doing well.
I'm hanging in there, you know, hunkering down at home, watching way too much television, playing with my dog. You know, working as usual, because I work from home anyway. So, but it's weird times. I just, every time I turn on the news, I shouldn't be shocked, but I'm astounded and depressed by the news that some of the images coming out of New York, especially Elmhurst, Queens, where this hospital is already over capacity. This is frightening, because it's a harbinger of things to come for the rest of the country.
Possibly.
You're optimistic.
I am. I'm always optimistic. So, and how I meant to ask you how your daughter is taking the shutdown. It's probably much harder for her than it is for you.
It is. And she's more scared about it than I am. She's more paranoid. In fact, you know, she's been working. She does body piercing. And so she works at a tattoo shop here in Coral Springs, Florida, where we live. And Florida, thanks to our idiot governor, Ron DeSantis, who, you know, because he's Trump's buddy, refuses to shut down the state, even though all indications say that after Louisiana, Florida is probably the next hotspot. Things, and people are flying here from the New York tri-state area because they want to escape there. And they're coming here and running around. And now they're told they should, you know, shelter in place for 14 days. Like, that's going to happen with no oversight. So long story short, she's really nervous. And she stopped working long before the shop shut down because she's the lone piercer there. And she's up in people's faces. And she's like, I don't care what you say. This is not safe. I'm done. So I give her a lot of credit for that. You know, and I'm going, you know, it's not a bad thing to earn as much money as you can until the money stops. She's like, it's not worth it. So my kid's smarter than I am in that sense.
I'm glad that she made that decision. That's very mature of her.
Yep, very much so. Although today she was bound
to governor. What an idiot!
Oh my, he's such a jerk. He's, you know, and he likes to play both sides of the coin. You know, he's like, well, we'll tell people that, you know, we're telling. And I'm just seeing my daughter drive out of the driveway, so I don't know where she's going, but she just, you know, she is going stir crazy. I know that much. Hopefully, she's just going to the store and she'll be right back. But anyway, the governor.
Show her that one of the videos of Indian police beating people up who are outside.
Oh yeah, well, and the thing is that they haven't passed the law here. They've closed down all allegedly, you know, non-essential businesses. They've said to shelter in place, but they haven't made it a directive, because Ron DeSantis is going, well, we'll do it county by county, because there are some parts of Florida that only have one or two cases. Well, that's how they spread. So he won't lock it down.
And when he says we'll do it by county,
yeah.
I think it's the county mayors and legislatures that are doing it, not him.
Right.
And I know Orange, I think as of today, Orange County closed down, but it wasn't because of DeSantis.
Exactly. And I'm in Broward County, and we finally got the order from Broward County just yesterday, although they had suggested we stay at home. And they had talked about, you know, we're going to close the beaches, but the beaches were still open. But Allison, actually, she's like, earlier today, she said, Mom, I think I'm going to go to the beach. And I said, I thought they're closed. And she thought it was open, our local beach, but they've shut it all down. So you can't even go out on the beach, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, too. I mean, it would be okay to go on the beach as long as you're not near people. I understand, though, that the virus can linger in the air for, I think it was 3 hours. I think it was 3 hours.
In the air. See, that's frightening. And so, and what we're learning now is it can survive.
You're wrong. It might have been 3 minutes, but pretty sure it was 3 hours.
Well, it could be because everything else we're hearing about it, like it can linger on surfaces for many hours or even days. And people are now talking about if you get a package delivered to wipe down the package before you touch it, to disinfect everything, mail, food delivery.
You got to wipe down everything.
Everything.
I mean, you know, it's not enough to just, wash an apple with water. I mean, I have to wash the apple with soapy water.
Wow. No, it is scary. And I hate to say it. I part of me feels like if we're meant to get it, we're going to get it. A lot of people are going to get it. And one thing we were talking about this morning that's so frightening is there are people who've obviously been walking around for a couple of weeks as carriers. They are infected, although they're asymptomatic. But the weird thing about this virus is you're contagious even with no symptoms. So people are walking around for 2 weeks without knowing they're infected, and they're infecting other people, and that's why this thing is spreading the way it is.
Sure. I mean, that guy, one of the original Typhoid Marys in New York was a lawyer who gave it to 50 people before they finally figured out that he had it. He didn't do that on purpose.
Right.
But that's what happened.
Right. And then there's Rand Paul, who apparently wasn't feeling any symptoms, but he got tested because he was afraid he came in contact with someone. But what they're telling you is if you're concerned enough to get tested, then you need to shelter, you need to isolate yourself while you're waiting for those results. And he didn't. He went to a Senate luncheon. He went to the Senate gym and swam in the pool the morning that he got his results that showed that he's positive. So I'm wondering who else in the Senate is now infected and doesn't know it yet.
Right. Well, I read this morning that, from South
Thune,
Dakota.
John Thune. He Thune. Went home last night with a mask on a private plane.
He's got it.
He's
I don't
sick.
Know that he does, but he took a private plane and he was masked. And he had said that he had been in close physical contact with Rand Paul.
Yep. Yep. This is just the beginning of it. And it is terrifying. I mean, this is the stuff of, a bad disaster film that probably we'd go poo-poo. That would never happen. Because, we always knew it was a possibility. That's why Obama, after Ebola, formed that Office of Pandemic Preparedness that Donald Trump dismantled 2 years ago. And then, oh my God, I happened to hear a few minutes of his jerk-off session last night, and he's going on and on about, we are doing more testing than anyone, and our tests are better than everyone's. And it's like,
they're beautiful. They're perfect
beautiful.
Tests.
Right. What fucking planet does he live on?
Planet Trump.
I guess. But the really sickening thing, his approval ratings are going up. What the hell?
Some polls, they're up. Some polls, they're just staying the same.
They should be cratering. Do people not realize what he is? I mean,
I haven't seen any of his actual job approval numbers go up. The question, when they asked the question about how he's handling this thing, There it's on some of the polls, they say he's handling it well. But then when you go further down the poll and they ask for his approval numbers overall, they're still the same as they were last time. And people who aren't tuning in and haven't tuned in,
and people who don't know how bad he's been. I mean,
right.
You know, just because we know it and we talk about it and we have for weeks, that doesn't mean other people have, you know, picked up on it. So they hear him saying things that sound about right to them, and they think he's doing a good job. They don't know. You know, he's so the biggest Democratic super PAC. I can't remember the name of
Priorities
it.
Priorities USA. The ad?
That one. They have that. Yes, they have that ad out now.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump is his campaign is literally suing or threatening to sue any TV station that plays the ad.
Right. I have the ad here right now. In fact, let me play it. It's only 30 seconds so people can see. This is what Donald Trump is threatening to sue any television station that airs this ad put out by Priorities USA. And everything in it is true. They're his own words. Here's the ad.
The coronavirus.
This is their new hoax.
We have it totally under control. It's one person coming in from China.
One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear.
When you have 15 people and within a couple of days it's going to be down to close to zero, we really think we've done a great job in keeping it down to a minimum.
I like this stuff. I really get it. People are surprised that I understand it.
No, I don't take responsibility at all.
And then it says, America needs a leader we can trust. Priorities USA.
Right, so he's suing because he says he didn't say that the pandemic was a hoax.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He said Democrats using it against him was a hoax. So it's kind of, a little Philadelphia Laura kind of
semantics.
Looking. Yeah, it is semantics. That's what it is. So, but that's an argument that's been going on for some weeks now since he first said it in South Carolina at a rally.
Yep.
And you have to interpret it the way you want to interpret it. I think that most people who hear that heard him saying that the pandemic was a hoax.
Yeah, I heard it. That's the way I took it. That's how it sounded to me, and I reported it at the time. And the graphic, for those who are listening to audio only, shows a timeline, the date that those statements were made, and the timeline by the date and the number of infected people in the United States going up as he's saying all these things like, you know, it's not real, where it's, you know, 15, it's soon to be one. He's been poo-pooing this from the beginning until, you know, just last week when he finally came around and all of a sudden said, yeah, I guess it's a real thing and you need to do the social distancing.
Until Easter when
until
he's going to have his
resurrection.
When he's gonna have resurrection.
Right. Oh,
so
God.
Here you have Pope Francis saying, forget about going to church on Easter. And here you have Donald Trump saying, what a beautiful thing it would be if the churches are packed.
Yeah, I hear
it's like
you.
A death cult. It is literally like a death cult.
It is. And so now, Howie Klein, so we are in the middle, believe it or not, of campaign season. We've got an election coming up in November, allegedly, to elect a new president, as well as all of the House of Representatives and a third of the Senate. And everything is at a standstill. The thing I don't understand is I do understand it, and I don't like what I understand about it. Until about 2 days ago, Joe Biden had been missing in action for over a week. And now he emerges with a new studio built in his house. And the first thing he did was this televised message where he lost his place on the teleprompter and he's shown sort of motioning what he thought was off camera, which is very apparent, saying, you know, basically telling whoever else was in the room that the teleprompter was broken. It was a clusterfuck. It was embarrassing, and everything he's done since is embarrassing. And I truly worry, I'm not going to say anything about his mental health, I worry that he's going to get his ass handed to him by Donald Trump in an election if he's the nominee.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the Democratic establishment is so horrified at the idea of Bernie that they are going to put all of their eggs in one basket, which is the belief that voters would prefer a corpse, which is what Biden is, to Trump.
Yeah.
And if Trump could convince them that they shouldn't vote for a corpse and they should vote for him instead, then we have no shot. Biden has nothing to offer.
Nothing.
The only thing that Biden has to offer is I'm not Trump. Right.
That's it. And so we still don't know where he was for that week. There are some, because when he emerged, he had a bandage on his head. And of course, there are some of the conspiracy theorists saying he had brain surgery. I have no idea why he was absent for a week. Bernie Sanders was holding virtual town halls and doing live streams and coming up with ideas and in the Senate and working on solutions. And Joe Biden was absent. And now all of a sudden he's back saying, I'm not going to debate Bernie in April because we're done with debates. We need to move on. Yet he's offering nothing except some very lame appearances where it seems like they're trying to pull him out of the view of the camera before he can say too much to stick his foot in his mouth.
Yep. I mean, he feels he's got it. And the people around him, his handlers, feel that what they need to do now is to protect what he's got and not take any chances. Because if they take a chance, there's a very good chance that he'll say something wrong and raise questions about his suitability to be the nominee.
Yeah, I don't get it. And then, so Howie Klein, you have a post going live at Down With Tyranny when we end, 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 Pacific, dealing with the dilemma that candidates running for House seats and for those one-third of the Senate seats that are open are going through right now. As I've learned, as somebody who, whose livelihood is dependent on listener contributions, they're not able to raise much money anymore. Everything is pretty much at a standstill. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, I mean, almost universally. Not 100%, but almost 100% of the candidates who I've spoken to, both for the House and for the Senate, have told me that the money has pretty much dried up. Not totally, but, especially the people who are real pros who are, doing this from a, very kind of professional way, and they know exactly how much they have to raise every hour and every day and
right.
every week,
yep.
every quarter, and they're, they're distraught. I mean, one woman told me that she has to cut her budget by $1 million because of the way it's going right now.
Out of how big of a budget.
And it's a real problem. I mean, it's a problem for, for people who bring in a lot of money by, doing telephone time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're calling up donors and asking for money, and they're either not getting money or they're getting, really small amounts, much smaller than they would normally get. And then their email programs where they ask people for money online is almost yielding next to nothing. And I'm finding the same thing at Blue America,
really?
Where, our the donations, ironically, some of the big donors have come through. I guess they figured out the need. And for us, a big donor is someone who gives $100. So some of those people have come through. One guy came through with $5,000, which is very rare that
wow.
anything like that would happen.
Uh-huh.
And they've spread it around among different candidates. So that feels really good. But basically, what we've lost are all of the – and that's the heart beat of Blue America. We've lost all of the small donors. I mean, that's normally where we get all our money. And all of the people who give $10 and $15 and $20 and $25, they're just not there now. They're too worried, and I understand that.
Yes.
I mean, I was listening to, I was just really more like passing a TV than listening to it. And there's some wealthy looking, guy. I don't know who he was, but he was obviously a well-heeled TV anchor of some kind.
Okay.
And he's talking about how great it is that, all these people are going to be able to pay their rent and their groceries and everything's going to be fine.
With $1,200?
Our wonderful Congress. what, with $1,200? What world is he living in?
$1,200.
I mean, for him, that's probably two fancy dinners with some friends.
Right. And it's certainly in either the city you're sitting in or where I'm sitting is not going to pay anyone's rent for a month, let alone all the other bills.
Yeah. I mean, and are they so unattached to reality
yes.
that they think that $1,200 one time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why Bernie was saying, not one time. How about every month until this thing is over?
$2,000 every month until this thing is over, which is what made sense. And the other, I just saw something just cross my Twitter stream. And it was an article from, I want to say, Philadelphia, and where Pittsburgh, sorry, woman who died of COVID-19 refused to go to the hospital, worried about bills, her son says. If ever we needed something to smack us upside the head to say, what the fuck are you waiting for? This country needs Medicare for all. We're living it right now. So they made a big deal of in this stimulus thing that passed the Senate to say, or even in the last bill, sorry, that or that Katie Porter got an admission from one of the Health and Human Services guys that there will be no copay or deductible. That the testing would be free, but it says nothing about your payment if you're sick and need treatment. There are millions of people who could get sick who can't afford treatment because they don't have insurance. It's insane. So you, along with the article you have going live right when we end the show, Howie, at downwithtyranny.com, you've got a thermometer post to go to Blue America to support the candidates who are running on a Medicare for All platform, yes?
Well, right. Well, actually, the thermometer goes to the candidates.
We're
not asking for money for Blue America.
Right.
We're asking money to support the candidates.
Yep.
And in the post itself, I asked some of the candidates, what they're going through with their fundraising now and how that's working for them. And some of them explained it in just one sentence, and some of them explained it in several paragraphs. But basically, they're all saying, the money has dried up. And in a few of these cases, it's especially problematic because they're running against multimillionaires. I mean, most of our candidates are challengers. They're progressive Democratic challengers, either up against a conservative Democrat or up against a conservative Republican. And many of them are, many of their opponents are multimillionaires. And this whole thing doesn't mean anything to them. They don't care. Their campaigns are financed, so it's especially a problem, for these people who are counting. They're not counting on raising millions of dollars, but they're counting on enough money to at least be able to get their name out to the voters. So when a voter goes into the booth, they know that there is at least a progressive alternative. And we know that, but plenty of people don't. They have
right.
no idea.
Right.
So this is going to real problem.
Right. And the other hand, I mean, everything's at a standstill now, obviously, when it comes to fundraising, when it comes to and the primaries are on hold. This weekend was supposed to be the Puerto Rico primary. That's been postponed. And then next Saturday was supposed to be Alaska, Hawaii, Louisiana, and a Wyoming caucus. And I'm sure everything's been postponed. So, again, it's not the federal government. Donald Trump can't postpone the elections, but the states themselves are postponing their primaries. Do you think, is there any possible way that we can enact a national vote by mail system before November, or to at least finish up the primaries? Or I mean, this is all new for us. This has never happened before. Any idea what's going to happen now, Howie?
I think it would be very, very hard for national anything.
Yeah.
Some states are doing it, and it's not only Democratic states. In fact, some of the Democratic states aren't doing it.
Yeah.
But I noticed that Ohio, where it's a completely Republican legislature, they have majorities in both the Senate and the House there, and a Republican governor, Republican Secretary of State, Republican everything, and they just went ahead and did it and said it's all going to be vote by mail now. So, they're doing a pretty good job over there in Ohio, even though it's it's not like a Republican like you've got in Maryland or Vermont. This is hardcore conservative Republican who's actually trying, this guy Mike DeWine, he's actually trying to do what's right for his state.
Good
and
for him.
That doesn't happen that often, it doesn't even happen that often with Democrats. But it certainly almost never happens with Republicans. And so I've been watching this guy and thinking, wow, he's really trying to do a good job here.
Good for him. And sometimes humanity rises above politics. And that's what we hope to see more of. Unfortunately, when you look at Congress, it's the former rather than the latter. By the way, it's with each passing hour and each passing day, more and more horrific shit is rising to the surface. A tweet just crossed my Twitter stream from Lawrence O'Donnell. And it's an article from the Boston Globe that says more than 100 Boston hospital workers test positive for coronavirus. I'm just, I can't even contemplate where we're going to be a week from today, let alone 2 weeks from today, let alone a week from today. I'm dreading it because we know where this is going. It's a bad movie.
Yeah, very, very, very scary.
I'm going back to your piece that's coming up. It'll be posted the minute the show ends at downwithtyranny.com about candidates who are having trouble fundraising. What about, like, their staffs? Are they able to pay the campaign workers? I mean, I imagine this has a ripple effect all the way down.
You're right. And some of them have already told me that they had to lay off some of their workers. Some of them have said that the workers have taken voluntary pay cuts. Mm. And, you know, some of them are just struggling as much as they can to keep paying the workers. But what's happening is that every time they make a call and actually do bring in some money, it's just going right to paying the staff. So it's a very, very tough situation for all of them. If you care about, I know you do, but I'm talking to our listeners here.
Right.
If you care about electing a progressive Congress and don't want just a bunch of conservatives, please, do what you can. I know it's tough for everybody.
Right. And if for those of us who held out some hope that they were going to do the right thing this time, I just before you came on, I was talking with Zach Carter of HuffPost about the Senate package that I guess is going to be voted on tomorrow by the House in one form or another. And his headline was, "Democrats are handing Donald Trump the keys to the country. The Senate coronavirus bill is shocking." And he's not alone in thinking this is a travesty, and it's another massive handout with no oversight to big corporations where the little guy gets screwed over.
Yep. Zach's a really smart guy, and, I follow him on Twitter,
yep.
And, I know him a bit. And he's also a great musician, by the way.
Is he? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, you should ask him next time he comes on.
I absolutely will.
His own music. While I was in the hospital, he sent me some really, really great music. You know, real sort of upbeat, dancing music, but
right?
Real cool.
Oh, good for him. You know, speaking of musicians, I'm sure you're enjoying some of it. It's nice to see our musician friends getting so creative. Again, we're all shut-ins and we're all trying to fill the time, but so many of them are doing, sets from their living rooms online streaming. I had Jill Sobule on the show last Friday doing a couple songs for us. She's out stuck in Los Angeles. She's living in New York these days. But I noticed Ben Folds is in Australia where he's going to do living room concerts. I mean, so many of them are doing things like this and getting creative that it's nice
John
to have.
John did it as well.
Who did?
John Fogerty.
Oh, John Fogerty. Yes, he did. He did one. Even Neil Diamond reworked the lyrics to, I think, Sweet Caroline about washing your hands or something like that.
That was cute.
Yeah. So, it's nice. And there are so many song parodies. I've been playing them a lot on the show because we need to have a sense of humor and we need to laugh. At least people are still being creative. And we have the tools now to be creative in our own home. So it's nice to see. I have a feeling we're going to see, after there's people are shut in, there may be a baby boom in 9 months. Maybe there's going to be some kind of a creative surge of a release of material that artists have recorded in their living rooms or bedrooms.
We'll Could happen.
Could happen.
I'm a little worried about. I don't see a baby boom.
No.
See the opposite. Yeah.
Really?
People are just so horrified. I don't think they want to. I don't know. I just think that people are not looking for a lot of physical contact.
No, they want to stay as far. I know. Look, when my husband leaves, I'm like, do we kiss or? I don't know what we're supposed to do. He's the one who
I'm
goes out into
about,
the world.
Promiscuous people, what they do, people who are used to going out and having sex with strangers a lot.
Right.
I wonder if this is, keeping them from doing that. I have to ask. I know a few friends who are in that world. I should ask.
Maybe there's, those, I'm sure you've gotten some of those threatening emails. I get them from people telling me, we have video of you on a porn site masturbating and give us so much money in Bitcoin or we're going to release it. I'm like, bring it on. I'd love to see it because, but maybe more and more of that is going on. Real virtual sex.
Yeah, well, possible. I never got one of those letters, and I never went on one of the sites.
I get the letters. I don't do online porn. I don't need to, thankfully. But yeah, I get threatened with it anyway. So it's a new world we're living in, Howie Klein. Hopefully I get to see you in person again one of these days.
One of these days, right? There's nothing that would get me on a plane now, I'll tell you that.
No, it's going to be a while. All right. Well, we'll keep following you at Down With Tyranny on Twitter and reading downwithtyranny.com. And if you happen to have a few extra dollars lying around and want to support progressive candidates because we need them now more than ever, visit and donate to the Blue America PAC, to your candidate of choice via the Blue America PAC.
Put that up on your site, too, so that people can see that thermometer.
Oh, you got it. I will post it over there today with today's show.
Great.
Thank you so much.
All you have to do is click on the thermometer. You get right to the candidates.
Absolutely. I will copy that.
I'll post it. The thermometer I use, by the way, is of all of the candidates who are campaigning on Medicare for All. So a little extra bonus there.
Absolutely. And if we ever needed it, now is the time. Thank you so much, Howie. I'll talk to you next week.
Yep.
Stay safe.
Take care of yourself.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the show. I'm also going to be guest hosting the broadcast. So actually on the broadcast, I'm going to replay the interview I did yesterday with Wendell Potter because it was so good and it was so informative. All right. We're done with I've got to edit this, but the Progressive Voices broadcast is done because we never got around to the news today. I will leave you with that. It's time for What's News.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On the same day that the number of deaths from the coronavirus pandemic in the United States topped 1,000, the Senate unanimously passed an unprecedented $2.2 trillion economic rescue package, with money set to go out to businesses, workers, and healthcare systems. Of course, even after three failed cloture votes, there were still a few holdouts and standoffs. Four Republican senators, Lindsey Graham, South Carolina, Rick Scott of Florida, Tim Scott of South Carolina, and Ben Sasse of Nebraska, had a problem with the provision that gave workers unemployed due to the virus an additional $600 a month on top of their regular unemployment benefits. They were claiming that unless this bill is fixed, there's a strong incentive for employees to be laid off instead of going to work. So they proposed adding an amendment that would limit unemployment benefits to 100% of a worker's salary. Bernie Sanders threatened to block the corporate slush fund portion of the bill if those four Republicans didn't back off.
When it comes to low-income workers in the midst of a terrible crisis, maybe some of them earning or having more money than they previously made. Oh, my word, we got to strip that out. Got to tell those poor people that no matter what, and by the way, when the McConnell bill first came up, they were saying that, well, we want to give $1,000 or $1,200, but poor people should get less. Well, that was addressed. Now everybody is going to get the $1,200. But some of my Republican friends still have not given up on the need to punish the poor and working people. You haven't raised the minimum wage in 10 years. Minimum wage should be at least $15 an hour. You haven't done that. You've cut program after program after program, and now, horror of horrors, for 4 months, workers might be earning a few bucks more than they otherwise went. Well, needless to say, this is an amendment that is coming up. I don't think it's going to go very far. And if it does go far, I will introduce an amendment to deal with the corporate welfare, the $500 billion in corporate welfare, which is, to me, a very serious problem. But I do not think they're going to get the 60 votes. And that will be the end of it.
Final outcome? That $600 provision is in the final bill. Chuck Schumer also delayed it while language for that $500 billion fund was fixed. You see, a Democratic aide said that the Republicans had left out of the final draft a provision that would force the Treasury Department and Federal Reserve to publish weekly lists of the names of the companies and others financed through that $500 billion loan program established in the legislation. Without this language, the aide said, the information could have been kept secret from the public. So the bill was delayed until the provision was added back at Schumer's request and a new draft bill was sent around to Hill offices. The two sides had previously agreed to the language. But progressives are still not happy with the final bill, as many see a repeat of a windfall for Wall Street and big business with little to no oversight, similar to what occurred in 2008 with the TARP bailout. Zach Carter, senior reporter at HuffPost, wrote of the bill, quote, "The emergency coronavirus legislation that the Senate agreed to on Tuesday can only be described as an outrage. It is not an economic rescue package, but a sentence of unprecedented economic inequality and corporate control over our politics that will resonate for a generation. It represents a transfer of wealth and power to the super rich from the rest of us with the support of both political parties, a damning statement about the condition of American democracy," end quote. The House is due to vote on it Friday, but since several House members have tested positive for the virus, many are pushing for a voice vote, something unprecedented in U.S. history. Stay tuned. So here's the latest. As of Thursday morning, more than 474,000 people have been sickened worldwide and over 21,000 have died from the virus. And the areas most deeply in crisis keep shifting. Spain now has more coronavirus deaths than China. Well, than China has reported. Second only to Italy. Japan and New Zealand have recorded their largest single-day spikes in diagnoses. Coronavirus has also reached the UK's royal family, which announced that 71-year-old Prince Charles has tested positive. In the US, an epidemiologist says virus deaths could reach their peak in 3 weeks. The American epicenter of the outbreak is New York City, where the number of cases is doubling about every 3 days. U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper has ordered a 60-day freeze on all troop movements overseas to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. The group of seven foreign ministers held an emergency meeting on the pandemic on Wednesday, but failed to agree on a joint statement because the other countries balked at the Trump administration's insistence on referring to the outbreak as the Wuhan virus. This according to the Washington Post, who cited three officials from G7 countries. Representatives of other industrialized nations in the group viewed the term as too divisive for a moment when world leaders need to work together to slow the pandemic. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the term was appropriate because the outbreak began in the Chinese city of Wuhan and the country's government didn't warn the rest of the world quickly enough. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, Donald Trump continues bucking the rest of the civilized world and pushing for an end to the nationwide social distancing practices that health professionals say are essential to saving lives. And some of Trump's Fox sycophants have said they'd be willing to die to save the economy. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading expert on infectious diseases, spoke about Trump's ridiculous quest to send everyone back to work by Easter.
You've got to be realistic. And you've got to understand that you don't make the timeline. The virus makes the timeline. Mm. So you've got to respond in what you see happen. And if you keep seeing this acceleration, it doesn't matter what you say, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you've got to go with what the situation on the ground is. So when people say it may take months, I think what people are talking about is how long it takes to go all the way down. But you may see in a relatively shorter period of time when you're seeing the inkling of the flattening and coming down. But, you know, you can't make an arbitrary decision until right. You see what you're dealing with. You need the data.
And finally, U.S. weekly jobless claims for unemployment compensation were expected to hit a record-breaking $1.5 million for the week ending March 21st. Instead, it was more than double that number, with a truly record-breaking 3.28 million unemployment claims filed. By way of comparison, the previous high was 695,000 back in October of 1982. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I really could use your help. My work is 100% listener supported. And due to the crisis, a lot of the monthly subscriptions have dropped off. If you're in a position to help, I hope you will. Please visit NicoleSandler.com and click on that donate button.